The Exploited Without a Control, 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Mr. Radioactive signing off. I'm going to leave you with Robert, and he's going to talk at you about some important issues for a little while.
It's awful.
Hardcore!
Ready? Shut up!
All right, Soda Pop, fuck you. Doing a cover tune. Covering the Cars, Rick Ocasek.
Okay,
they're trying to have bogus smoke really fast.
Oh, man, I'm hanging up on them.
Okay. Let me find some way to insulate you.
What? Insult me?
Okay.
Please.
Okay, we're getting ready to go.
Have you got your instrument in hand?
I got my instrument in hand. As perverse as that may sound. Okay, so we're going to go for it.
Right now. Cover tune? Cars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm putting the phone down, okay?
Alrighty.
Check, check.
Whoa, man, live on Monkey Magnet Radio.
People are living in houses and cars, houses and cars, and so- pages, controlling the flows. User unfriendly, taking big bites. Terminal nature, a Macintosh blight. Caving in, your family's unconscious, their wires are thin. The double lock's busted, it's time to escape. How much longer are you going?
Coming up next, Bathrooms, Pierre's Broadsides, 2 hours of civil rights, talk about local political issues and homeless rights issues. Stay tuned. You're here with Bathrooms Pierre Robert Norris from 10 to 12, more or less. And you're listening to Daryl Cherney. We've got lots of stuff coming up for you, including a bombshell. Your hosts will probably be going to jail on April 2nd for 2 months. I have to give you some reports from behind bars. Bagels and bars is going to be the theme of that show because my conviction was for serving bagels in San Francisco. But more about that in a moment on Bathrooms Pierre's Broadsides. And you were listening to... Do we have a mic? Yes, we do. You're listening to I Had to Be Born This Century, a Daryl Cherney album. That was Houses and Cars. That's where we're at. Some of us don't have houses or cars, but we do get the benefit of the police surveillance under the city's sleeping ban. Well, we got interviews aplenty this morning. Interviews with Berkeley, interviews with San Francisco, and even an interview with Hawaii. We got on the line Candlelight Kim Argula, not on the station phone line for all you folks, but we got this recorded previously, but not too long ago. She's an activist who has fought for homeless rights here in Santa Cruz for 3 or 4 years, was a founding member of the Union of the Homeless of Santa Cruz and of Food Not Bombs, and she's giving us a report from the Big Island on Hawaii, and that'll be a bit later. But now... perhaps the most earth-shaking news, at least for me, the California Supreme Court has turned down my appeal of a 2-month jail sentence, which I incurred after a jury trial in 1994 for serving rice and bagels in San Francisco's Civic Center Plaza to homeless people. I was swept up in the Matrix sweeps. I was given a trial. I was convicted. And I was sentenced to 2 months in jail. And I've discussed that in past shows, and I'll give a recap in this show. But the case was kind of wending its way through the courts. Well, it reached the California Supreme Court in late February, apparently, and we just heard about it yesterday. They said, no way, you go to jail. It came back, and we have received word that there is a April 2nd hearing about the issue. Actually, it means I'll probably be remanded into custody at that hearing unless we can get some kind of a delay, and that's uncertain. In San Francisco's Hall of Justice, I believe it's Department 14 at 9 a.m. on April 2nd, which is about a week away. So, make use of me while you can. Very soon you'll have to send me postcards to the big house. And here's an interview about this same topic with my knowledgeable attorney, David Beauvais of Berkeley, who's been covering activist cases for half a decade, probably longer than that, but I've known him for 5 or 6 years. Here he is talking about my case and the cases of others in Berkeley, as well as the Seattle sitting law, which, as you know, was upheld by a 3-judge panel, 2-1. We haven't really got an in-depth report on that yet, but we will in a future show.
So I'm on a line with Berkeley attorney and activist David Beauvais. Hello, David.
Hi.
And you recently had a decision that may have some impact on Proposition O in Berkeley. A Seattle sitting ban was upheld, apparently, by a 3-judge federal court, and you've had your Proposition O on hold thanks to federal judge Claudia Wilkin. What's going to happen to Berkeley? Is it going to be illegal to sit down on the sidewalk?
Well, this case is not good for Berkeley, for the Berkeley ordinance. well, it's not good for striking down the Berkeley ordinance, because the Seattle ordinance is very similar to Berkeley's ordinance, and it was upheld by a three-judge panel.
2-1
2-1
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that the Berkeley ordinance may be considered by a different panel than this one. There are something like 28 judges on the Ninth Circuit, and they sit in panels of three. So the probabilities are that there would be different judges
mm-hmm.
on the panel that hears the Berkeley case. We don't know the identity of that panel yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the
so
this case does not help.
So there's no immediate impact on the Berkeley case, but it doesn't look it looks less positive than before?
Right. It looks less positive than before, because even if the same panel doesn't hear the Berkeley ordinance as heard this particular ordinance, this opinion will carry weight with that panel. And although they're not bound by that decision,
mm-hmm.
they will, you know, it makes it more likely that they will follow it.
And when is there likely to be a decision at the same level for the Berkeley Proposition O, which makes it illegal to sit on the sidewalk in Berkeley?
At this point, there's no date set for oral argument, which would be the next step. The briefing's been completed. The oral argument will take place, and then after that, the court makes a written decision, and the timing of all of that varies widely from one case to another. But I know that it can be anywhere from 20 or 30 days to 5 or 6 months.
So during that period of time, it will still be legal for people in Berkeley to sit down on the sidewalk.
Right.
And this has also impacted San Francisco, which, as we know, rejected a law against sitting on the sidewalk. But it seems like police are enforcing a non-existent law over there, as well as a non-existent matrix program, which we're assured, Willie Brown, the mayor, has assured us is gone. But still, arrests are up from last year around the sleeping situation there.
Right. Well, the that raises a whole different issue when there's no legal justification by a statute or an ordinance. Being enforced, then that just becomes illegal behavior on the part of the police.
Mm-hmm. What's happening in Berkeley since Proposition O, the sit-on-the-sidewalk law, has been put on hold for the last year? Have police been nonetheless engaging in illegal harassment and herding and dispersal of homeless people on Telegraph Avenue and in other areas in the business districts?
Nothing's come to my attention of any specific incidents of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's generalized harassment going on Berkeley on Telegraph Avenue, but I don't have any specific cases that I could cite to you that where that's occurred.
I've heard that People's Park, a whole new set of laws has been posted about going to this community park, which is four blocks from the university right above Telegraph Avenue, which apparently had been a focal point. Has been a focal point for the last 25 years of, both political protest and community use, and also the rights of homeless people to be there. I know Food Not Bombs, a local organization which serves free food, locates there, as do other charitable groups. Has People's Park become less hospitable to the homeless?
Well, generally speaking, yes, but in the very recent past, there's been a little bit of light in that the city apparently is giving up on its efforts to remove Food Not Bombs providing lunches at the park. So that's a good sign.
Well, that sounds good. Now, let's turn to another case, the case of the Food Not Bombs activist who was convicted of serving free food in San Francisco. I guess the first such case in a jury trial that San Francisco authorities ever took through the process. That happened in 1994, and in fact, that was my case. I was convicted in that jury trial, and you weren't the attorney at that time, but you've been the attorney who's been covering the appeals on that. What's been happening around those appeals? I was sentenced to 2 months in jail. That was stayed, pending appeal. Where are we now?
Well, the appellate court affirmed the conviction, basically ignoring some rather powerful reasons to overturn it. Not the least of which was the fact that a witness who would have been favorable to you, that's Keith McHenry, who's one of the founders of Food Not Bombs, was conveniently arrested at the beginning of your trial, and then when your trial attorney asked that he be brought in as a witness, the court refused to have him transported.
Mm-hmm.
So they arrested him so that he would not be available to testify. At least that's how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Very suspicious.
That's how it looked to me at the time.
Yeah. The other component of it was that there was one issue that the court did not know exactly what to do with, and they ordered that the jail time be stayed until the California Supreme Court ruled on that particular issue in another case.
Which is the issue of jurisdiction, whether a municipal court could examine the actions of a superior court, because we were concerned with a superior court injunction against Food Not Bombs for serving free food in San Francisco.
Correct. And the California Supreme Court ruled at the end of February that municipal courts could entertain challenges to injunctions issued by the Superior Court.
Which actually isn't a traditional approach, right? That's always been the case, pretty much, right?
Well, it had always been the case because no one had ever raised the issue before, but it was raised in this other case in Southern California, and then when that occurred, it became an issue in your case as well. But the California Supreme Court has put to rest that issue. That means that there's no legal impediment at this point to carrying out the sentence that was ordered.
Which is 2 months in jail, right?
Correct.
Now, so what is our next step? Will I, in fact, have to immediately go to jail at a certain time? What is our timeline?
Well, the municipal court has ordered a hearing in your case on April 2nd, 1996. I think it's in Department 14, but I don't have it in front of me. And I think it's at 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Hall of Justice at 850 Bryant Street.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone wishes to go to that hearing, once they got there, they could find out where exactly it is, if I'm wrong, by going to the clerk's office.
Now, am I likely to be taken into custody at that time and remanded to jail?
That's difficult to say. First of all, I don't know if the trial judge who actually imposed the sentence is going to be there, or if this will just be handled by one of the regular municipal court judges. What I'm talking about is that your trial was handled by an out-of-town judge who was brought in especially for this case because no San Francisco judge wanted to touch it.
Judge Barclay, yes.
And whether they'll bring him back or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I would want to do is try to enlist the cooperation of our new district attorney, Terrence Hallinan, who, when he ran for district attorney, said that he was going to stop, change the policy of his predecessor, Arlo Smith, and he wasn't going to prosecute Food Not Bombs cases.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be asking him to help us to have this sentence modified, get some kind of relief from the court.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that could occur without Judge Barclay being brought back, because I think Barclay would probably be less sympathetic to this than one of the local judges might be.
So what is the process that you're going to use to get D.A. Hallinan, who was previously a supervisor and actually one time served free food with Food Not Bombs on the steps of City Hall wearing a jaunty chef's cap and was not arrested, I might add, while others around him were. What's the procedure you're going to use with him? And you actually, you've already approached him on this issue earlier, have you?
Yes,
not?
I've spoken with him one time, and I think at that time, you know, he had indicated some willingness to help. He was a little bit unsure of how to do it because this case has gone far down the pipeline. What we're trying to do, and I think he's going to be receptive to this, is to possibly make a motion to modify the sentence and maybe even do more than that and try to get the conviction itself set aside by stipulation with the district attorney.
We're on the line to Attorney David Beauvais of Berkeley. It's March 28th, about 9 o'clock in the evening. And
no, not yet. It's March 24th.
Oh, you're right. My goodness, I'm a few days ahead of myself. It is only March 24th, but hey, only a week or so till this April 2nd court date, which you think is either Department 17 or 14 or something.
Right, I think it's in 14.
Mm-hmm. In San Francisco in the Hall of Justice, at which time I will have to pay the piper and, shall we say, ante up 2 months of time for the crime of giving out bagels and rice in October of 1994. Do we have any other legal maneuvers that will enable us to delay this fatal hour?
Well, that's something that I, you know, have to consider. I've just gotten the notice today, and so I haven't had time to consider all the full array of options, but certainly one of them is to get Hallinan's cooperation. That would be the informal mechanism. Probably we will file a motion of some sort with that. When a When a judgment has been affirmed on appeal, you have a right to have the judgment modified when it comes back to the court. So that's a well-understood, well-established sort of motion to make to modify the sentence. Some of the grounds for that would be that, you know, the circumstances that existed at that time have now changed.
The policy of the city is different.
There's no further arrests. There's been no further serving of food in San Francisco. There's a number of...
There actually has been further serving of food, and there has been an arrest, but...
Of you.
Of me. I've been arrested for serving food since then.
Okay. There's also the, you know, argument that the political climate in the town, although it may not have changed in fact, has changed in theory, because both Helen Ann and Brown, who were not in office, well, in their respective offices at that time, were not part of the group that formulated that policy.
The Jordan Matrix Plan policy.
Right, and since they weren't the formulators of the policy, and they purport to be, or at least Helen Ann does, purports to be unsympathetic to the policy, then I think the consequences of the policy, which include you doing jail time, should be ameliorated. And so I'm going to be asking him to help us try to do that.
Now, the Matrix program, I think there's a similar question being raised as to whether there will be an amnesty for past tickets. Do you have any tickets for sleeping and having a backpack in a public place and the kinds of offenses that Mayor Jordan's police force, largely still in place under Mayor Brown, were giving out tickets? I guess 30,000 citations were issued during the Matrix program from 1993 through 1995 when Jordan was in office. Part of the concerns of homeless activists in San Francisco has been to stop that from continuing. Another part has been to make sure that which has already been done is somehow struck from the books or the penalties are struck. Any word on how that's going?
No, I don't. I do know that it's proposed that there be a meeting with Mayor Brown and District Attorney Helen Ann. And I believe that someone's trying to set up a meeting now to discuss these questions, you know, which include what you've just talked about, plus the manner by which the injunction, which was issued against Food Not Bombs, could be
set aside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that I guess that's all currently still in an uncertain state. And what you're going to be doing in the next week is hustling to get some sort of motions together so that we can...
Right. I'm going to be focusing my immediate concern on your conviction, but I'm also going to be involved in the other more generalized effort to try to get the political powers to back away from this program that was initiated by their predecessors.
Good. Anything else happening in Berkeley you think that's pertinent to folks concerned about civil rights for the poor here in Santa Cruz?
Berkeley seems to be pretty quiet right now. Not that that's good, but we haven't had any drama here in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is I've been out of town a lot, so I may have missed a few things here and there, but I try to keep abreast of things.
Well, you actually were engaging in a civil rights suit, which you were rather hopeful about in terms of the rights of defendants whose rights were abridged in peaceful demonstrations at People's Park on the sidewalk.
Right. We did. We went to a court trial for some people that were arrested and thrown off of the sidewalk while they were conducting a peaceful vigil.
Back in 1991.
Right.
And you were suing in federal court for damages?
No, we were suing in state court. We were in the Superior Court in Alameda County.
And how did that go?
The judge has issued a tentative decision, which basically says that the University of California had a right to do whatever they want with their sidewalk.
Well, why am I not surprised?
It was a baffling decision, which ignored... 30 or 40 years of precedent from, or even more than that, from the U.S. Supreme Court talking about sidewalks being open public forums for public expression of exercise of First Amendment rights.
And who is the judge who made this revolutionary decision?
Judge Dunbar.
And what is your reaction to this?
Well, my reaction is I'm a little disappointed, but not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I basically feel that we're at a time when the... upholding of First Amendment values is not all that strong. And
Is there an appeal in the works?
We had a meeting just this past week with the plaintiffs, and we've all decided that an appeal is definitely in order.
And what's
we intend to do that.
And that, what's the timeline on that appeal?
Well, we're not even at the point yet where we can actually file an appeal, because this decision is a tentative decision. It won't become final for probably another 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't anticipate that the court's going to change its view during that period. So
you'd hope to get a couple $100,000, and instead you're getting slapped across the face?
Well, you know, we didn't really have a sense of how much money the court might award. We felt that we'd made a very strong case.
How many people were involved in this?
There were seven plaintiffs.
And who were they?
Well, they were Carol Denny, Robert Nichols, Robert Sparks.
Since deceased.
Who's now passed away, Jerry Nichol. Tom Fisher and Mike Orr. I believe those are all of them.
Mike, as we call him. And so these folks all got together and decided they want to continue to pursue some kind of redress for the fact that they were herded off the sidewalk with little ceremony and taken to jail, right?
Right. Yeah, there's a number of interesting legal issues in the case that have to do with interpretation of our state civil rights statute. We didn't bring this action under the federal statute. And the state statute is a relatively new one that doesn't have a lot of case law construing it. So there are some issues there that we'd like to have resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the appeal could be one of those cutting-edge appeals that will have an influence on other cases in the future.
The FCC decision is coming down the pike for Free Radio Santa Cruz, I should say, hearing in, what, April 12th or thereabouts?
Free Radio Berkeley?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, do you have any predictions on that?
No, I don't predict those things. I mean, obviously it looks good because the judge has already gone on record as not being very sympathetic with the FCC's position. But I don't know ultimately what's going to happen.
So it's it looks like a grab bag again, because I remember your predictions on the state court case were very positive. You felt you had shown just without any qualification that the police were abusive, that the basic constitutional rights were violated, that there was an open and shut case, and that the it was almost universally acknowledged in the courtroom that that's what happened, and yet here we are with the state court ruling, overruling all the precedents and saying, hey, you know, forget it, sidewalks belong to the University of California, not the people of California.
Right. I mean, I always split my mind into two parts on this. You know, part of it's my own, what I try to be as objective as I can in viewing the case and when I talk about it, and this was a case that really involved very few factual issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so there weren't disputes. It didn't come down to credibility with the police saying one thing and the demonstrators saying another. It came down to everybody agreeing on what the facts were and what were the legal consequences of those facts, and the judge just ignored the First Amendment and went ahead and decided that the University of California's property rights were the determinative issues.
Wow.
On a public sidewalk.
Hmm.
The most amazing thing I'd ever heard.
Well,
can't believe it.
You still can't believe it. Well, listen, David, I want to thank you for this extended report. I know that you're sometimes mic shy. I've seen you on the streets castigating me roundly for trying to get you to an interview, and I do appreciate your updating us all on both my case, which I hope everybody will follow, April 2nd, 9 a.m., and I guess Department 14 or thereabouts. You may have to check the calendar once you hit the Hall of Justice in San Francisco at 850 Bryant Street. There'll probably be a demonstration of Food Not Bombs in front of the building on that day, I suspect. If they continue their traditional course. I also, my understanding is, didn't Amnesty International take an interest in my case?
Yeah, it was very interesting. The their annual report for, I guess it was 1995, which basically is an overview of the status of human rights in various countries around the world, had a 3-page segment on the United States, and your case was mentioned.
Hmm.
As was the persecution of Food Not Bombs in general. but specifically your case was mentioned.
So maybe they'll smuggle some bagels into me in the county jail. I guess that's where I'll end up serving time if I'm taken into custody on the 2nd.
Right.
So, well, thank you, David, and if you have further updates, don't fail to give us a call.
Oh, sure.
And that was attorney David Beauvais, appointed by the court to represent me in the appeals process of the conviction for serving free food in San Francisco in an incident, well, among many arrests, but the one incident they took to trial was in October 1993, not 1994, as I said earlier, case which happened right after the intensification of the Matrix program under former Mayor Jordan. Though we seem to have an ongoing Matrix program under the current Mayor Brown. But we do have some positive statements from Brown, which I'd like to see our mayor, Mike Rotkin, repeating, namely that people are not going to be arrested for sleeping. I mean, even if he's lying, at least he's lying in the right direction. At least that's my point of view, and I'd like to see Rotkin moving in that direction, too, as well as all the weak sisters and folks on the city council who say they oppose the sleeping ban, like Scott Kennedy, but do nothing to change the law, which, of course, is the real test. I'm also like to put out an appeal here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm not giving out the call-in number because, frankly, I don't know how to use this new phone. There's a strange-looking portable phone here. I can't figure out how to turn it on or how to hook it up. So if any mechanical geniuses are within stomping distance of the studio, please move down here and show me what to do so I can actually set up a two-way phone line. Otherwise, you're just going to be hearing me. Here's an incoming call. Hello. Okay, we're going to try this. Yeah, see, there's a problem. I don't know how to work this phone to get it to go on. So we have a ringing phone, and so I'm just going to turn the ringer off because I don't know how to use it. So if anybody wishes to hot-foot it down here, that would be great. And we can find out what's cooking. In the meantime, we have lots of stuff cooking for tomorrow. Tomorrow is a day of demonstrations. We at least have announced such a demonstration. We're going to be feeding people at Calf Garden Pacific at 3. There's numerous events planned. You may have seen the flyer around town, including a transient trasharamatarian, which is not trashing of the downtown area, but rather a kind of theatrical demonstration of homeless people as trash, which I believe apparently is the new perception on the city council. You may remember Mike Rotkin wants to drum some of the drummers out of town, or at least limit their hours. That's perhaps a more exact way of describing what he wants to do. Having failed to close off the Ford's parking lot, he's now moving on the drummers. Anything to please his pals in the Downtown Business Association. It was kind of funny. Rotkin was at the marijuana teach-in yesterday, which had an all-day teach-in, very interesting. I wasn't there for much of it, but it was impressive what I saw and heard, and a lot of media coverage. And Rotkin apparently gave a speech, and Tim Rinker, or Token Tim, as I call him, who has received numerous tickets for sleeping at the City Hall Sleepout, now in its 25th day, I think had a sign in the front row, which he raised when Mayor Mike Rotkin got up there about the sleeping ban. The attempt of Rotkin and Kennedy to maintain their liberal credentials in the face of these anti-homeless laws is always kind of an amusing spectacle, particularly if you're not homeless, because if you are homeless, it's an enraging spectacle. It's a grotesque form of hypocrisy that we have in Santa Cruz, where it's illegal for people to fall into a sleeping state after 11 o'clock at night. But that is what we have, and that's what the City Hall Sleepout is trying to change. And tomorrow, this demonstration, which begins at 3 o'clock at Cathcart and Pacific, and is going to involve a meal and a speak out again, as we had a week ago, and then possibly another lie down and some other sort of exciting events that we won't reveal until they happen. There's that 3:30 agenda item at City Council, too, at the earlier City Council meeting. City Council has two meetings, 3:30 and 7, every second and fourth Tuesday. This is the fourth Tuesday. And they're having the Carnival River Woman Voucher Program, which is a proposal to allow homeless people to spend $10 and then get kind of bussed up to the parks, the national, or I guess the state parks. Henry Cowell and various other campsites, and it's a two-week proposal. It's going to serve 60 people, and, you know, that's real. I mean, there's 60 people. But, of course, that's not anywhere near the number of people that need to be served, and it's going to leave everybody else without a place to sleep. And we don't hear Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable at this point coming out with a high-profile solidarity demand for an end to the sleeping ban, or possibly a moratorium, and I would love to have them on the air talking about this, but unfortunately, they never call, they never write, no postcards, no telegrams. So they're apparently doing their kind of backdoor deals with the city council to establish a campground, not a campground, but a access to a campground, which is fine. But again, in excluding others like myself and Sean Alimi, who they kept out of a meeting with Mike Rotkin about a week ago, they sow suspicion, and they sow, I feel, dissension, and also they fear that there's a form of liberal elitism happening where two people who are well-intentioned and good-hearted are setting themselves up to speak for the homeless community and, in essence, to some extent, undermining the efforts of those who are seeking a broader solution. I'm a big advocate of open meetings. I feel that everyone should be allowed to come to meetings, if not invited. And though there's some people that I find occasionally get disruptive at meetings, and that has to be dealt with when the meeting itself happens. Everyone has a right to be there if they want to be there, particularly when you're dealing with meetings with people in positions of power, like city council members. And if you meet privately with them and secretly with them and then arrange deals with them, it's not a good thing, particularly if you're intentionally excluding people, and particularly if you're excluding me, for heaven's sake. I guess that there may be a personal element there, but I think there's also an element of principle. I have the same concern about the ACLU, which I'm hoping will not repeat itself this time around. In 1994, the ACLU, funded by San Francisco, as I understand it, and the Northern California ACLU, took several cases of the sit-down demonstrations, Lisa Henry's, and I believe, I'm not sure if Eric Marcus's case was funded as well, but attorney Margaret Marr and another attorney, Isabel Gilman, informed me and Linda Edwards that they would not take any cases in which I was associated, in which people that were associated with me were involved, at least people closely associated with me, in which I was a witness. Again, they had no specific reasons except that Marr had made her decision. She's actually conducted a whispering campaign against me in this town for a long time. She's a great attorney. You know, she does wonderful work for homeless people when she does it. She did fine work and still does good work. But I can't agree with an exclusionary policy such as she and Sherry Connable followed back in 1990 and the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep and the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board, and even now as we approach some kinds of negotiations with the mayor's office. And the ACLU is again talking about kind of having private meetings to which everybody is not allowed and so forth. It's not good. I don't like it. Although I welcome any support, and anybody who wants to support the ongoing sleep out, you know, whether you be KKK or ACLU or QED, you know, bring your cups of coffee down to the sleep out and bring yourselves down. I think Dan Hopkins kind of holds the fort down there alone every day, and he's not entirely alone at all, of course, to Jimmy Riley and Bull and Devon, and a whole, actually, crop of new people that have kind of shown up recently, Caleb and Pat, Dave, number of new individuals. I want to kind of give them a salute and tip of the hat. I'd also love to be able to use the telephone here, and I'm unable to do that now. So if anybody knows how to use this phone, please come into the studio and show a novice who doesn't know what the hell to do how to use it, because that way we can actually include the community in what we're discussing here. That would be very nice. The demonstration we're going to have tomorrow, which starts at 3 at Cathcart and Pacific, is a sort of a continuation in its own way of the demonstration we had a week ago Saturday, which was kind of a walkabout on the mall, a kind of a, to some extent, in-your-face demonstration, although we were not in the faces of the people that didn't need to be in the faces of. We went to the Downtown Informant Center, the hosts. Those are the people with the green shirts who tell you you can't walk your dog, who call the police when they see a minor marijuana deal, who call the police when they see you sitting down and you refuse to get up, one of whom pepper gassed Food Not Bombs volunteer D-Bob for the crime of having an open container in a sack and apparently protesting a what D-Bob regarded as ongoing harassment by host John Behrens. We went to the host center, and we lounged in there and did a little demonstration around there. And it's illegal to lie down anywhere in the downtown area, with the exception of City Hall, which is a different kind of public property and zoned differently. But elsewhere, it's completely illegal to lie down, even if you're not blocking the sidewalk. That's one of these, we don't want these unsightly, trashy-looking homeless people lying around type laws, which will become, I'm afraid, more vicious now that the Seattle sitting ban has been upheld, although Berkeley's Proposition O, as you heard earlier from Attorney David Beauvais, is still on hold, thanks to Federal Judge Claudia Wilkins. Indeed, thanks to her, our radio station is still broadcasting. She has fended off FCC's attempts to close down Free Radio Berkeley, and since we've gotten more complaints than Free Radio Berkeley, they would probably come after us mighty fast. So I think what I'm going to do is play for you a little more of the demonstration on the 16th that we had a week ago Saturday, so you can get a preview of what to expect tomorrow if you come. We're also considering we're going to be having this demonstration starting at 3 o'clock at Cathcart and Pacific at Friendship Corner, and coming possibly taking a detour to City Hall at 3:30 to do some speaking on the Conable Riverwoman proposal. Actually, it's a Celia Scott, Catherine Byers proposal to fund the Conable Riverwoman proposal of camping in the public parks for 60 people, 60 lucky people, you know. At 7 o'clock at City Hall, there will be an opportunity for people to speak their minds at oral communication. We asked Mayor Rotkin to have an emergency ordinance which would allow people to sleep at night, as Mayor Brown has declared can be done in San Francisco. And Rotkin told Sean Alimi, one of the leaders of the protest, that that would not be possible, that he wouldn't do that. And so we have a position where the city council and mayor is supporting an anti-homeless law when there's no legal place for people to be. And it may put people in a position where they might decide to sleep in at City Hall. Who knows? I mean, the City Hall, it's a nice building. It's warm. It's contained. It's not being used at night. I mean, maybe we could put it to some good use. I'm not suggesting and conspiring to do this, but I would say that when people have no other alternatives, they take the alternatives that they can use. And I would say unused public space and public buildings might be such an alternative, although that might be also criminal behavior in the eyes of a city council which regards sleeping as criminal and apparently sleeping in their sacred chambers as even more criminal. So we'll have to talk more about that. I'm a little under the weather, so let's go back to the demonstrations of the 16th and get a recap of them.
When did they start the sitting ban?
The sitting ban began in 1978 here in San Francisco.
I mean, not sitting ban, your protest.
The protest started March 1st.
Right.
March 1st.
Okay.
Myself and this other gentleman, Bruce, and Daniel Hopkins.
Okay.
We started it.
Real quickly, you were saying something about the Governor Wilson.
Sure.
Governor Wilson will be opening the armory next year. Is that?
It's not that he won't be opening the armory next year. In fact, he may be opening it for one more year.
Okay.
It's that the city of Santa Cruz has closed the only legal campground in Santa Cruz and has Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Okay, hold on.
Non-violent protest, careful fire.
Okay, city closed. The Coral Street. That was when I was here. Coral Street.
Open air shelter.
Open.
It's actually
air.
Mentioned in these two flyers if you have
right,
that time to read through them.
City closed the Coral Street open air shelter. When was that back in?
That was on December 16th. I think December 12th.
In December. And so now there's been a.
There's a crisis because the winter armory shelter closes shortly. It was actually supposed to be the last day last night, but I think they're keeping it open an extra day to deter people from protesting.
So now there's a crisis with more homeless people.
Right, 80 to 150 people from the shelter will now also be on the streets. And there will be
80 to 100 people
150.
On the streets with no place to go.
Out of it, well, there's actually 500 to 1,500 homeless in Santa Cruz, in my opinion.
That's, well, no, with the closure of the shelter, that added how many?
Another
more?
80 to 150.
80 to 100 people, more homeless people on the streets.
Right.
In addition.
To our leaders, Hassan, okay, is great. Right.
So you helped organize this.
I helped organize this. I did the flyers, but the men who are really on the front lines, the men and women are on the front lines, are the people who sleep out every night at City Hall. That's the major part of this demonstration.
Right.
They are on night 16 of their sleep out.
On what?
Night 16. Right.
Okay. Now, when we go over to City Hall, how many do you anticipate will be on there?
It's hard to say because people do not willingly face the cops at night in protest situations. It's varied between 5 and 15 a night, I would say. Wouldn't you say?
On the 16th day of the vigil?
Of the,
how many people about have been arrested?
Sean, there were 5 arrested on...
Total. Give me a whole number.
Here, for the vigil, you mean?
Since the sleep out began.
About 12 people.
And actually, the number of arrests has swelled, I believe, 35 to 40. There were 3 tickets last night, no arrests. And Sean Alimi, who's been in jail over the weekend on $500 bail. What happened was, on Friday morning, they arrested him on a misdemeanor charge of sleeping twice within 48 hours. That would have entitled him to a jury trial and a public defender and his day in court. And it would have put the county directly on public record in terms of the kind of abusive expenditure of public money to harass homeless people that they're engaging in. Instead, what they did was they held him for 3 days, actually almost 4 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I guess he was still being held Monday morning. And the DA's office informed his attorney or his legal advisor, Catnip Kate Wells, this morning that they weren't going to file charges. So apparently they're just using misdemeanors to arrest people and hold them for periods of time in jail and then release them days later. It's a form of cruel and unusual punishment. It's a lack of due process. We're hoping the ACLU will get involved today when they have a meeting with members from the vigil, but that remains to be seen. The ACLU, again, has been very chary of getting involved with homeless rights struggles. Unlike in Berkeley, where they secured an injunction against Proposition O, they've made no such effort down here against the anti-homeless downtown ordinances. Proposition O in Berkeley is their anti-sitting law, which is still on hold, as you may remember from the earlier interview with David Beauvais. Continuing with this March 16th demonstration, you can hear some more and get a preview of what awaits you tomorrow if you dare to show up in your pajamas or whatever else you wear.
What were they arrested for?
Arrested for camping or sleeping. For camping or sleeping.
We're going to get the, when you guys begin your rally, so we'll get that, but I just need to do a quick interview. Is that all right?
Sure.
With you?
Okay. Well, with Dan Hopkins, he's good too.
Yep, see you later on.
Yeah, we talked to him.
Yeah.
Well, you got your footnotes even bigger.
Yeah, they're getting bigger and getting better.
I have called out to the mayor and
soapbox, get it clear for the
I'm irritated as hell and I'm not gonna take anymore.
All right.
There you go. All right. Start fixing.
All right, here we go.
First of all,
turn around. There's a speech down here.
All right. I want to take my hat off to those people who have been sleeping out every night.
Yay!
At City Hall. There goes my button. There are people who have been sleeping out every night at City Hall. They've been sleeping out in cold weather.
Right on.
They've been sleeping out for you. If you have a friend who's tried to sleep in a van, if you have a friend who's tried to sleep outside without being harassed, then you know how it feels. No wonder when these guys, and there seem to be more and more of them over on that corner, are going to show up with their ticket books, their flashlights, and their squad cars.
That's okay.
Yeah.
When will people be able to say enough? Well, this man, Sean Elmay, has said enough. This man, Dan Hopkins, has said enough. How else says enough? This guy says enough. Crow says enough. Jim Costner says enough. This guy says enough. Everybody's hands are going up. We've had enough arrests for sleeping in Santa Cruz. It's true. Santa Cruz has not yet joined the civilized community. In San Francisco, Mayor Brown has made it legal to sleep at night. Mayor Brown has made it legal to sleep. Why can't Mayor Rotkin down here do the same thing? That's what I want to know. Why can't Mayor Rotkin do for a small town what Mayor Brown is willing to do? And I would really wish the media would focus on the people of substance instead of on one person who's drunk. Thank you very much. Anyway, I'm not going to hog the mic much. But this mic is for anybody who wants to talk about issues concerning poor people, particularly the right to sleep at night. As you may know, on March 15th, that was yesterday, the Armory supposedly had its last night. Hi, sister.
Hello.
How you doing?
Nice.
Last, you may, but I think he's first.
Yeah, but I'm going to go back to him.
And he's not. There's sort of a line here. Join the speaker's line.
I'm not sure.
And you can speak your lines, whatever they are.
Ask her.
On March 15th, yesterday, the Armory was slated to close. We understand that the mayor prevailed on the Armory to keep it open another night so that people would not join this demonstration.
That's
very clever. However, what's he going to do for the rest of the month? What's he going to do?
Very much.
For the rest of the year, what's he going to do?
Nothing,
exactly.
What?
Mayor Rotkin has no plan to deal with people who need to sleep at night.
Because he sleeps comfortably in his house.
Because, as one voice says, he sleeps comfortably in his house.
Of course he does.
I'm trying to hold this mic still. I'm still a novice at these things. What are we going to do about it is the question. That's always the question. Some people believe in trying to negotiate these issues.
Well, I know where you can.
Others believe in throwing away mics that don't work. I say...
Can I correct you on some of this? I'm crazy on that. Can you wait till... Why don't you get up and speak up here?
Do we have an upgrade?
A couple of facts.
We have an upgrade here on some facts. What's the upgrade, Rick?
The Armory
where you can sleep!
If it rains for 5 days.
The Armory will stay open according to this Armory Observer, Rick, if it rains for 5 days. Looks like tonight...
No, you didn't get it.
No.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to rain according to the National Weather Service. They'll keep it open for 5 days at a time.
All right.
Okay, let me start.
If there appears to be rain in the offing, according to Rick, the Armory will be open for 5 days after that report, which is good. Of course, this is only going to last, what, until the end of April at the latest?
The end of this month.
Actually, the end of this month, Rick tells me. So the Armory Winter Shelter, which has served as the mayor's pretext for doing nothing about the sleeping ban, will be gone at the end of March. Will you be gone at the end of March?
No.
Will you give up sleeping at the end of March?
No.
Because the mayor tells you it's illegal to sleep at night, does that mean you're going to walk around all night following the mayor's good advice?
Fuck that.
I don't think so. I think people need to sleep in Santa Cruz, and that's what we're here to speak out about. And I invite the next speaker to take over with this rather difficult, probably sleeping mic. Thank you.
All right. Hello.
Dan Hopkins is now speaking, we hope.
John Stewart is speaking at the Speak Out. It's about, what time is it? Looks like 2:30, 2:25 at Calf Garden Pacific. I've had a couple of media hounds running around, cameras, petitioners. Looks like about 40 or 50 people speaking out.
All right.
Good work, John. People are hugging, and here's another speaker, Crow.
That was just,
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a tape of a demonstration that happened a week ago Saturday in order to dramatize the need to end the sleeping ban and make it legal for Santa Cruz City's population of 500 to 1,500 homeless people to be able to sleep at night without harassment, tickets, and or arrests. I tip my hat to Peppercorn Penny, who just showed me how to work the phone, and I'd like to apologize to all those people who called in and didn't get through. It's rather obvious how to work the phone, but sometimes the most obvious things are difficult for us folks to get a hold of until we see the light. Anyway, the phone line is working, and you can call at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The lines are open. Definitely give us a call, and we can put you on the air if you've got something to say about any of this. I hope you do, because I think it's real important. I also was finally able to make contact with the Community Homeless Alliance of San Jose. Community Homeless Alliance is really quite an activist group over there. It used to be called the Student Homeless Alliance, and it was spearheaded by Scott Wagers, Nancy Nichols, and other folks, activists in the community, and students and homeless people who are concerned about the really glaring problems that homeless people face in San Jose. In fact, there's a story in today's Mercury News which talks about a proposed law in San Jose. Actually, it's not in the Mercury News. It's in the Chronicle, and it concerns a proposal to bar panhandlers from freeway entrances. They tried this in Santa Barbara as well. I'll read it to you. You get some idea of what's happening. It's another crackdown on poor people. And it's Santa Clara, which is a city just north of San Jose. San Jose is in Santa Clara County. And you can find this on the page A13 of today's Chronicle. Proposed ban on roadside begging. City of Santa Clara calls panhandlers a traffic hazard, by Marcia Alicia Gara. This is the same reporter who gave us no facts around the issues of the River Street refugees when they were bounced out of the Coral Street open-air shelter along with hundreds of other homeless people by the Citizens Committee to Exploit the Homeless, which, by the way, is meeting this week. If you want to check out their meeting, I've been threatened with arrest if I go, but otherwise they're holding a open meeting, which you can go to. It's at 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock on Thursday, at Garfield Park Church. Garfield Park Church is up in the avenues and the circles, as they call them, at the intersection of Woodrow and California Streets. So if you're interested, 4 o'clock on Thursday, you can check out what the Citizens Committee of the Homeless is doing or not doing. In this case, these are the folks who gave us the Trailers Not Trolls project, which apparently is still on hold. I think there's some talk that there's a rehearing for a toxic substances test, which was never done when the property was transferred. That's the rumor. I haven't gotten any solid information on that, but that's the rumor. In April, they're going to have another zoning board hearing on that. So maybe the Dan Hopkins appeal was right on target, but we don't have specifics on that. If you want, you can go to the Citizens Committee meeting and ask those hoary patriarchs themselves just what is going on. Are they keeping an open-air field there, which is there's one building in the field, one trailer moved from Stanford, of course, the administrative trailer, and the administrators come first, whereas everybody else gets to sleep illegally, and there's no open-air shelter for people to sleep in at the moment. 4 o'clock Thursday for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, if you're interested. Continuing with this proposed ban on roadside begging in the Chronicle, here's the story. Hoping to curb the increasing numbers of traffic-savvy panhandlers at intersections, the city of Santa Clara is considering an ordinance banning all roadside solicitation. The measure, proposed by Police Chief Charles Arola, would forbid the solicitation of drivers by anyone standing in or along city roadways, according to Deputy City Manager Carol McCarthy. The ordinance, which goes before the City Council tomorrow night, would primarily affect panhandlers who stake out median strips and freeway on-ramps with handmade cardboard signs, although other types of solicitation would be banned as well. Does this mean goodbye to hitchhikers and their signs? Could be. Santa Clara officials say the proposed law is narrowly focused on eliminating traffic hazards. What they mean, of course, is that that's the pretext for the current law. The real reason is we don't want these folks advertising what kind of a community we have, a community filled with homeless people. This only addresses solicitation from vehicles on the streets, not in parking lots or in front of grocery stores. In case you didn't know, it's illegal to solicit money to or from a vehicle downtown in Santa Cruz. Although I guess you can hold up a sign. This is going to bar signs as well in Santa Clara in the city. McCarthy said, "We received a lot of complaints about panhandling in those areas, but individuals certainly have a right to free speech." Mm-hmm. Laws designed to limit and control begging have been proposed in cities throughout the state in recent years as the numbers of homeless have increased. Suburban cities lacking pedestrian-oriented downtown areas have seen an upsurge of beggars staking out intersections and on-ramps, tailoring their approach to tap a mobile clientele. Opponents say that anti-panhandling laws are motivated more by social discomfort than by safety concerns. The American Civil Liberties Union is following the progress of the Santa Clara Ordinance. "One suspects that it is not the act that's the problem, it's the message," said Alan Schlosser, managing attorney for the ACLU of Northern California. "They don't want the poor standing on the roadways." Santa Clara officials based their proposed ordinance on a similar law adopted by the Los Angeles suburb of Agoura Hills in 1991 and upheld by a state appeals court in 1994. The Agoura Hills law targeted the crowds of day laborers who would disrupt traffic by approaching the cars of potential employers. You know, I was an activist in Santa Barbara for a year and a half, working with the Legal Defense Center down there, and they used to have a lot of Mexicano day laborers, a lot of Hispanics, and some Anglos standing on one of the streets just off the main drag, and they didn't disrupt any traffic. That was how they found work. But because they didn't like the way these people looked downtown, and the merchants were so damn paranoid about people thinking, oh, I have to deal with brown poor people, and when I come down to or realize they're within two blocks of me, they had them herded down to the slum district, the under the freeways where they now are. And it's at the same time, they made parking under the freeways for people who had their vans, moms who had their buses where they were bringing up their families and so forth, made it illegal to park between 3 and 5 in the morning, something that I think has been done in the north beaches in our county here in Santa Cruz, so that you cannot park in a van overnight. They're using the parking laws to attack people who are trying to survive. Not creating a problem, but trying to survive. And I say that because there are many ways of dealing with people who create real problems. Anybody who litters, anybody who creates those kinds of problems can be given tickets for that kind of behavior. But this is an attempt to eliminate a class of people, as I repeatedly accuse the downtown ordinances, Kennedy-Rotkin's laws of being. I should also say Matthews' laws, Cynthia Matthews' laws, perhaps even more than Kennedy and Rotkin. Last year, Corte Madera passed a law prohibiting solicitation of motorists, but suspended enforcement until the court battle over a much broader panhandling ordinance passed in Berkeley is resolved. But South Lake Tahoe, which banned roadway begging in 1994, however, has had no problems enforcing its law and no legal challenges to its constitutionality. "It has been very effective, very well received," said South Lake Tahoe City Attorney Dennis Crabb. "When officers here first contact panhandlers in the street, they offer information about all of our social service providers. If they need assistance, they can get it." Assistance out of town, I suspect, used to be the case in 1988 that we tried to get Jane Yokoyama to... Actually, Jane Yokoyama proposed a change in the camping ban that simply asked for officers to give warnings before they gave tickets. That kind of provision has since been ruled unconstitutional by the local courts, but it seemed at that time to be a good idea. The city council's response in 1988 here in Santa Cruz was to ignore it, or actually to defeat it, to deep six it, and then to instead propose that little cards be given out to the police department to give out to homeless people, telling them that they could go to the two-bed River Street mini shelter. At that time, the River Street shelter, which I call the mini shelter, had 2 beds for homeless people and 12 beds for mentally ill so-called people. It was one of the biggest farces of the Wormhout Laird administration when they were running the city council. But again, the joke was on you if you were poor. And similarly, up in Santa Clara and Las Vegas, or I guess Lake Tahoe, they're telling us that they're giving out all this information about social service as well. What social services? So all this is sort of an introduction to the Community Homeless Alliance. I began talking about that a few minutes ago. That's a group in San Jose that has been concerned both with decriminalizing homelessness and with establishing affordable housing, which is something that we in Santa Cruz, among the HUF anyway, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, my organization, haven't been too much involved with, but definitely we do support. The need for affordable housing is one of the main reasons for homelessness. And in San Jose, Nancy Nichols and Scott Wagers, who I call Scallywag Scott, and I guess No-Nonsense Nancy, I'm not quite sure what I've called her, they've been engaged in demonstrations throughout the last 3 years around affordable housing issues. They've been able, actually, to open up affordable housing in the way that, let's say, Terry Messman of the Oakland Union of the Homeless and Dorothy King were able to open up affordable housing from 1988 on in Oakland, just by sledgehammering down doors of buildings that were not up to code and taking them over and refurnishing them and then getting the city to confiscate or sell them, getting them to be turned over to homeless families. So here's the latest report from the Community Homeless Alliance, which is engaging in something similar. They're trying to stop Caltrain from bulldozing bunches of houses along the Guadalupe Parkway. And there was a small story in the San Jose Mercury News of some days ago. Unfortunately, illness, confusion, and general senility have prevented me from bringing that story to the studio. It's my filing system is definitely the worst. But here, for your gratification and instruction, is what Scott Wagers has to say about what they're doing in San Jose. And it's quite a historic call, because Scott returns very few calls, and when he does, it is an occasion.
Hello, Robert. Scott Wagers, Nancy Nichols calling. I know you can't believe it. I was watching some old footage of us going to jail the other day. There you were. I better call Robert. I know he calls me a lot. Sorry not to get back to you as much as I should, but just want to give you an update. Here's what's happening in San Jose. Actually, it was on Channel 2 in Oakland last night, and on Channel 5 and on Channel 11, we had a march and a vigil over at 79 units of abandoned housing that is going to be destroyed. Actually, right now, there are, by Caltrans, they're going to widen the Guadalupe Parkway. Actually, there are 20 families still living in some of these houses, and they're going to be evicted and not relocated by Caltrans. So that was the focus of our demonstration yesterday. Now, we're going to probably march sometime next week, maybe around Thursday, to the state building and try to meet with either Al Alquist or John Vasconcellos and try to get them to place a moratorium on the demolition of these houses, because we want to open them up like we did the houses on River Street about 3 years ago. We've already met with Caltrans officials, and they tentatively looked at the idea of sparing the houses for a while, at least maybe 4 years, 5 years, until they actually begin construction on the widening of the Guadalupe Parkway. That was the first step. Second step was the demonstration yesterday, which was pretty widely covered in terms of media. And then third is the march next Thursday to the state building. And then beyond that, we're certainly going to stand off the bulldozers, maybe commit some kind of civil disobedience. So that's where we're at here in San Jose. I have heard about what you guys are doing in Santa Cruz. And don't know if we can come down sometime. Maybe we can. Maybe we can bring a contingent from our group down to City Hall there. Hope you're doing well. And do stay in touch. And we will be busy with this this action around the Guadalupe Parkway, but you know, this is a gold mine as far as we're concerned. So many housing units and so few people with access to affordable housing. I think it's a good situation. So I hope you're doing well, and keep us apprised of what happens with you, Robert. Keep up the good work. Bye bye.
And that was Scott Wagers from the Community Homeless Alliance. If you're interested in contacting them or getting more information, give a call to 423-HUF, 423-4833, which is the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in Santa Cruz, and I can perhaps put you through to him. I don't have his number with me at the moment, but he does have a voicemail over in San Jose, and they are doing some serious stuff, serious activism over there, as we are over here. And in fact, there will be some serious activism this afternoon, assuming I'm not completely bedridden. I'm kind of ill and I have a slight fever at the moment, but I'm hoping we can kind of repeat a little tabling that we did on Saturday. On Saturday, which is a very busy evening for Santa Cruz downtown, we set up a table downtown right in front of the Cinema 9 Theater discussing the sleeping ban and regaling people in line for the movies with the arguments encouraging them to call the mayor and get him to decriminalize sleeping, like Mayor Brown has supposedly done in San Francisco, and encouraging people to volunteer help and coffee and fellowship to the people sleep out, which I encourage everyone listening to this broadcast to do. They're down there 24 hours a day, and they really need your help. There are all kinds of projects we could do if we had enough people and we had enough stuff to do. I mean, we had enough person power to do it with. Anyway, we were at this Cinema 9 and on Saturday, and we're going to be there again on tonight at starting at 6:30. Although there are always some questions that came up. The police didn't bother us. They were quite friendly, and we appreciate that. But Mayor Neil Coonerty, I should say, when he was mayor, it was then Mayor Scott Kennedy, the next year in 1994 here in Santa Cruz, passed an anti-homeless law which makes it illegal to have, quote, any object on the sidewalk at night. And that was used against only two people, Robert Flory and Wanton Dave Jacobs, in July of 1994 when they did a July 4th, or actually July 5th, demonstration on behalf of the rights of the poor in Santa Cruz. They put up a little kind of a little cardboard box, and stayed inside it, and they were arrested for that. Well, theoretically, this law also prohibits tabling after dark, and we were expecting the police to come crack down on us, and they may well crack down on us tonight. Who knows? So if you want to be a part of this, you can check it out and join us. We have an incoming call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
From an inmate at Santa Cruz County Jail. This is a collect call from Sean.
Hi, dear.
To accept the charges for this call, please press or dial 9 now. To deny the charges for this...
So we are accepting the charges.
Thank you for using CCC.
How you doing?
Hey, is this the jailbird Sean Alina?
Yes, it is. How are things going over there?
Well, it looks like you're still in the big house, big guy. We heard they were going to release you today without charges. Did Attorney Kate Wells get through to you?
Negative. I talked to her a couple days ago.
Yeah, well, what we heard this morning, we heard four different stories this morning about what was going to happen to you. But the most recent story was from the DA's office, and that was that they were refusing to file charges. And that being the case, presumably they'll have to release you. What's the word from your jailers?
No, they're not giving me information. Supposedly I'm going to court at... Well, first of all, this morning they said that I would be going to court like 8 or 9. Then that didn't come through, and I requested to talk to some of the higher officials, and being a sovereign citizen, I requested to see the magistrate, and they didn't recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because I told them, you have held me over 72 hours, it is my personal right now at this point to either be charged with something or you got to release me, because they haven't charged me anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's been over 72 hours.
Right. Although I believe it's 72 working day hours. I don't think the weekends count.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah. So they can hold you till Tuesday morning, I think, is their... Or Tuesday afternoon, since you were arrested Friday in the very early hours of the morning for the crime of sleeping in front of City Hall.
Yeah. Well, I hope a lot of people show up at court. If you would please let the... UCSC air personnel know what's going on too. I don't know what the call letters are up there. If you can get some student support behind this too, if you got some people there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see if I can question if they put me in front of a magistrate, in front of a judge.
Well, I don't think you're ever going to get in front of a magistrate. I think they're going to release you without charges from the jail probably in the next 12 to 24 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Then how's the vigil going?
Vigil is going good. There were three tickets last night, two of them in a vehicle for people who were just sort of peripherally related to the demonstration. One ticket for, I guess it was, who got the ticket? Jimmy Riley got a ticket.
Where did he sleep?
He was sleeping in front of City Hall. You know, and people kept the vigil all night. There seems to be a number of new people there, and that's a good thing. And, of course, for those who want to call the vigil, it's 425-9679. That's the City Hall payphone listeners. to contact the vigil. And I guess for you, Sean, do you have Kate Wells' number at the office?
Negative, I don't.
Well, I can give it to you, so you might want to call her and talk to her.
Okay. Let me get a pen. Actually, let's talk some more. Are we on the air?
We are on the air.
All right, great. Just want to let the people know that let's not put up with these stupid laws, because none of these has been hasn't been a contest or protest against these. They've never been tried in the Supreme Court. See if they violate any of the supreme laws, such as common laws, human rights, or any of the other ones. Because can you imagine? They give you tickets for sleeping.
I imagine it, and I bet you can imagine it even better.
Hey, I'm here. Actually, you know what? This place, they did me a favor, because I've got at least two or three different wards of this jail. They recognize some of the laws are stupid, and some of these people are here. They're actually some of them, not all of them. They actually are, because that's the priors or whatever, and then once something else happens, just the police just abuse their powers and just throw them in a brig, some of them, they have jobs, they lost their jobs, some of them, they have, they get, let's say, unemployment, they've lost their unemployment because of what the police does, instead of figuring out exactly what the hell is wrong, rather than just throw people in jail. Anyway, that's a whole different story, but some of these laws that they have passed without checking it, see if it's violating the law. Anyway, just look, if the Senate and the House of the United States of America passes a law, it goes to the Supreme Court, make sure it doesn't violate any of the rights.
Well, it's even more abusive because we have a city council which is supposed to be vigilant toward the rights of our local people, and of course the main purposes of these laws are to eliminate the rights from a class of people who they believe are not deserving of protection, those who have to sleep outside at night.
Well, as you know, I'm not a political person. The reason I got involved in this thing myself is because I got a ticket for sleeping, and I thought that was a whole bunch of hogwash.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm not going to stop as soon as I'm out of here. Guess where I'm going?
City Hall, perhaps?
Yeah, this sounds like a pretty good spot. You know, permanently I've changed my address to 809 Center Street, Santa Cruz, California. If you want to write me in the letters, Sean Alani, S-E-A-N, last name Alani, A-L-E-M-I. I'm with Feed the People, organization called Feed the People, Feed Homeless, Hungry. I don't like to call them homeless anymore. Mm-hmm. Let's change it to ceiling impaired.
I see. Ceiling impaired, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, has Feed the People been feeding in spite of your being in jail, Sean?
Yeah, they have been feeding. From what I understand, they're still doing a good job. I do have some contacts through some other brothers and sisters in here. They call their people to go check, and yeah, they've been feeding. Seems like everything's going good.
How are people being treated in the jail? What's your sense of that?
In a fascist way. It is expected in jail people to be treated unfairly, because according to the laws, that once you're in jail, you don't have any more rights. They decide your rights for you. Part of the thing with Feed the People, we try to feed everybody the same amount of food and stuff like that. And I recognize, hey, some people do need some more food, because the amount of food they give you here is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, teeny tiny. You're losing weight, I'll bet.
Oh, but I don't know about that. You know, once you feed homeless people or ceiling impaired people, people recognize you. As a matter of fact, a lot of them recognize me here. And guess what? They feed me here, man.
That's great.
It's unreal. It's what goes around comes around. You know?
Oh, will you be joining our demonstration tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, as soon as if they release me today, yeah, I'll be there tonight to get arrested again. I'm not going to stop. I'm going to get arrested every night until something happens about this thing. And I want people to know that for every time that one person gets arrested in the city of Santa Cruz and are thrown in jail, it costs the city $113.55. What that means is for every time I go to jail, they could house four people for a period of 1 week in a hotel or a motel room.
Well, I hope you're enjoying your emergency housing. It's rather expensive for the taxpayers, but at least you get your own little jumpsuit.
Hey, I got a cute orange jumpsuit. I wish I could keep this.
Mm-hmm.
I got a little band around my one of those like doctor
bands, medical around your wrist.
Bands around my wrist.
Right.
So you know who I am, stuff like that. And let me see. Actually, I'm well taken care of. They give me blades to shave. Wow, what a concept, huh? Shaving. They give me a lot of stuff, and thanks to you, Mr. Robert Kahn?
Yes.
Oh, you're out of here? Good. A couple of these people are out of here. They even threw some students in here. Obviously have some priors.
Mm-hmm.
For, I guess, some just being at the wrong place at the right time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked them up for some bullshit excuses because whatever.
Any other messages you want to give to any people out here?
Yeah. Please respect each other. Protest against any unjust laws. It is your civil duty. Because if we don't protect ourselves, nobody else will. And the way they're going about it, this thing called money is becoming more important than people's lives and people's rights. Please do not forget what you're here for.
True enough.
Okay.
I should tell you that I'm probably going to jail on April 2nd for 2 months for serving food in San Francisco. That decision just came down from the California Superior Court.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
2 months? For what?
Serving food.
That's
food.
Not logical.
No, it doesn't make much sense, does it?
Have they sentenced you on that?
Oh, yeah. I've been sentenced. We're going to try to get the sentence modified, but it's a long shot at the moment.
You can't do community service or anything like that?
Oh, I could offer to take probation, but I'm refusing to do that.
No, forget probation. What? They're saying we're criminals? criminals of what level? We're criminals because we want to be free, and we want other people to be free. This is not about you and I, Robert. It's about us as a unit. And you know, what you did, beautiful up in San Francisco.
Well, thank you, Sean. I approve of what you're doing down here. Let me wind this up. Anything more you want to add?
I would like to thank you for all the supporters out there and sleeping away and not let the vigil go away, because it's very important we protest these laws, which we think is unjust. And thanks, Robert Floria. I hope he's out there still.
Oh, yeah, he's still around.
All right, great. And Robert Norris, yourself, John Earth with Feed the People, and Jimmy Riley with Feed the People, and a couple other people. Say hi to Kate. Let me get her number from you.
All right, well, Kate's number is 457-1545.
457-1545.
Yep.
457-1545. Okay, I'll memorize that and I'll write it down momentarily. Call or collect?
You can try. I think she'll probably accept it.
Okay, why don't you call her, let her know I'm going to call her about the next 15, 20 minutes.
Give it a try.
Okay?
All right.
Thank you, Robert. Have a wonderful time.
Get out
soon,
Sean.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Don't do any sleeping.
You can get plenty of sleep here. I don't know, it's not large. They let you sleep inside jails, but they don't want to let you sleep outside under beautiful skies.
Indeed.
There's something wrong with this.
Talk to you when you get out, big guy.
Peace, bro.
Bye-bye.
And that was political prisoner Sean Alimi, who's currently still in jail, even though the DA is not pursuing charges against him. He's just being held on nothing at the moment. $500 bail. Presumably he'll be released today or tomorrow. But the crime for which he was arrested is misdemeanor sleep crime. Ordinance 6.36.050 of the city's municipal code, a law we have urged Michael Rotkin, the mayor, Scott Kennedy, Cynthia Matthews, and the other sleep slayers on the city council to change. So far, to no avail. They aren't even interested in putting it on the agenda to talk about it. But you can talk about it. You can come to city council tomorrow at 3:30 when the voucher proposal will be discussed for the state parks, and again at 7 when there's oral communications, and you'll have 3 minutes to talk to the city council members. If they'll let you. Rotkin has threatened arrests at different times of people, myself, for instance, Patrick Lancelin for another. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at the moment, 96.3 FM. And the call-in number, and the lines are open, is 427-3772. So if you got something you want to say, now's the time, 427-3772. We're going to be tabling tonight on the mall, I hope, although, again, it depends on my condition. I'm beginning to get kind of sicky poo here. here's what happened when we tabled last night. We had some interesting conversations, actually Saturday night. It seems to be there are a lot more people downtown at night than there used to be because of all the movie theaters that have opened up, or I should say the one major movie theater. And, of course, the area is being rebuilt. Business is booming. And now you also notice lots and lots of homeless people because there's no legal place for people to be at night anymore with the closure of the Coral Street open-air shelter.
So it's what time you got home? Does anybody know what time it is? You know what time it is? Twenty after six. Thank you.
And
20 after 6 in front of the Cinema 9 Theater. We've set up a table about 10 or 15 minutes ago. Yes, you're on tape. You're under arrest as well. We're tabling here. We're talking to Paul, young guy on a bike with a Star Wars number one comic book. Also calls himself Robert. Chris Brosd is here talking, and I guess we have Jim Costner somewhere. Penny's just showed up with stuff. And we have a table right essentially in front of Blockbuster Video. We're talking about the rights of homeless people and the right of people to sleep without being arrested.
I'm talking to
Dwight Harrison.
And Dwight, you're a black man on a bike, and you just signed our petition for a homeless campground.
Absolutely.
And you just got out of jail, you say?
Yeah.
And what was that all about?
Oh, I had a ticket for sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning.
A ticket for sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning for which they put you in jail?
Absolutely. After the ticket went to warrant, they arrested me and they kept me in jail for 3 days and they put me in the psycho ward.
And are you a psycho?
Absolutely not.
Now, how long ago were you arrested for this?
2 weeks ago.
And how long ago was the sleep crime committed?
2 years ago.
Where was the sleep crime committed?
Up by the 7-Eleven on Mission.
And it went to warrant, you hadn't paid it, so they locked you up for, what was it, over the weekend, or was it throughout during the week?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
This was a sleep, had anybody else in jail for a sleep crime that you know of?
Nobody that I know of.
How were you treated in jail? Any comments about that you want to share?
I was treated terribly. I was humiliated. They had strip searches about 4 or 5 times for no apparent reason. It was ridiculous. People following you in jail, the jail wards who were checking you in followed me. It was terrible.
And what about now? Are you a person with a house or do you sleep outside?
I still sleep outside.
You're still a sleep criminal.
I'm sleeping, but I'm not a criminal as what they say is criminal. If a man can't fall asleep, something's wrong.
That's for sure. Anything else you want to say to the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
I'd like to say everybody come out and commit to this. It's worthwhile because if a person is tired, that's preeminent on his mind, so he'll have to fall asleep, and he should be able to fall asleep anywhere he wants to. It's his body, and he won't get another life. It's his life, too.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you.
All right. Well, it's 7 o'clock outside the Cinema 9. The movie lines are growing longer, but the people are looking more and more apathetic here. We have about, it looks like, 10, 12, 15 signatures after about an hour. Jim Costner, Chris Brosd giving out literature. Robert, the young guy on his bike, has taken off. Would you like a flyer, sir? I'm talking to a bashful man named Tom, who actually himself was hassled back about 14 years ago for a period of 4, 5, or 6 years when he would come down from the Bay Area and sleep outside.
When I was in Sweden, the law in Sweden is that you can stay overnight anywhere you want. Even the owner should allow you to stay. This is the law. You can stay on the private property because they try to encourage people to go to the nature. When I came here to this free country, I was like surprised at how they can hassle people for enjoying the nature, and especially the park rangers, where they supposed to encourage the tourism. And not everybody want to come here to Santa Cruz and rent the room and be again like in his own house. So I couldn't really understand, but I tried to explain. I was writing letters to Sacramento, and even they was claiming that the area from Santa Cruz like 40 miles north is not allowed allowed to publish.
So, what year was this that claim was made?
This was 81, 82, 83. So I was writing letters to Sacramento, to Park and Recreation, and I was trying to tell them this is the crime that they close the coast, so many miles of the coast. And so they was really angry with me, and you know, they're writing tickets every time they could. And I went to Aptos department and I asked for the map where they could show me that this area is closed to the public. And they showed me the map where it was only the area which is the one beach only, which was closed. The rest was not included in that. So I took this map and then I start, you know, having like document that they don't have the right. So that was the time when they opened the whole area. They make this wide range park, and they open all the beaches from that time. So I think I was the part of this process to help, you know, understand that this...
Well, it's still illegal to sleep on the beaches.
Oh yes, they allowing only during the day, which I think they're doing this because of the law, you know, and I understand the law is very difficult, but I would really encourage people to start fighting with this, because this is like, you know, this the most beautiful time you ever will have if you can go and enjoy at night the nature, have some small party, and I think this is wonderful.
I mean, you haven't been would you call yourself homeless during that time?
No, not really. I had my apartment in Bay Area that time in Mountain View, and this was just for enjoyment. I was feeling very bad because how they could claim that I can't do this, you know, and I don't see any difference if I'm homeless or not. I should be treated as everybody, and homeless should be treated as everybody also. And some people they can maybe have choice to be homeless, and I don't think this is something wrong. I mean, this is the free country, and that's what we...
And where are you from now?
I'm originally from Poland.
And you are now living in Santa Cruz?
I'm living in Mountain View still, and this is I'm coming on weekends usually.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Anything you want to conclude with?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Don. We're in front of the Cinema 9. I guess it's around 7:40 or so. I'm talking to
David Jones.
Yeah, but you got a sign here. Can anyone spare any change for a dollar or two? Thanks.